Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mulio Gavaza from the Business Day and Financial Mail. And for today, we are looking at the national budget speech, which is set to be delivered by Finance Minister Tito Mboweni on Wednesday. That will be the 26th of February 2020. And he's going to be giving us an outlook into spending by the government, and it looks to be quite an interesting budget speech. Many people say that this will be the toughest budget speech that the minister has had to deliver since the 2008 global financial crisis, and he has actually set to be looking to cut about 150 billion rand of spending from the budget. And to achieve this, there are a couple of options on the table, but people aren't too sure about what's actually going on. Some people are talking about a VAT hike. Some people are talking about increasing other taxes. Whereas, you know, a lot of people are then saying, but you can't be taxing an already pressured South African consumer. So one of the places that a lot of people are looking to is the public sector wage bill. You know, some are saying that perhaps if we, you know, reduce spending on salaries in the public sector, reduce some of the wages for some of the higher earning individuals in the public service and stuff like that, it could help us to get to that magical number. But on the line to unpack some of these issues and to discuss the viability of such a plan, we have COSATU's parliamentary coordinator Matthew Parks joining us on the line from Cape Town, just to let us know, is this a feasible plan or not, and should the public sector wage bill be something that is actually going to be touched and discussed? Matthew, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. And you?
I'm fine, thank you. I guess for our listeners out there, could you just give us, where things stand at the moment? Because a number of economists have actually flagged the public sector wage bill as one of the few things that government could actually address to get to this magical 150 billion rand in cost-cutting measures for Minister Mboweni. But we know that as COSATU, you guys have already come out to say that it's unfair that you know, wages in the public sector are one of the things that, you know, should be touched. Where do you guys stand on this matter?
Look, I mean, we're sensitive to the crisis that government is facing, and in fact, the entire nation. We have 40% unemployment. We barely have 1% economic growth. The public debt levels are huge. So we recognize we're in a crisis. We're willing to contribute, to engage, to find solutions to this crisis. And we know there are many different interventions which are required. But look, our job as a union is to defend workers' jobs, to make sure they won't be retrenched, so the jobs are safe. It's also to make sure that workers are able to earn a living wage. When you talk of public servants, we shouldn't just imagine if we're talking about a million people out there who are not needed. They perform critical public services to society, especially to the poor. So they teach children, they provide security through the police, they are nurses, they are doctors, they build roads, etc. The wages are not huge. But look, what we also believe, we need to see a couple of interventions. One is that we lose about 10% of our budget, the national budget, and even the parastatal and municipalities, through wasteful expenditure and corruption every year. So government needs to get a grasp of that. Government also needs to continue to rebuild the South African Revenue Service, where we've lost a lot of money because SARS was basically decimated during the era of state capture. But what we're saying specifically on the wage bill is that we are open to engagements. There are some initial engagements already taking place between ourselves and government through the Department of Public Service and Administration and Treasury, and we are also putting proposals on the table. Some of the initial proposals from government we felt were very dangerous and reckless, where, for example, they wanted to give public servants a 0% increase this year, and that would hit nurses and teachers, police officers, prison wardens, cleaners very hard. These are workers who are already struggling to survive each month, And it's also important to remember that public servants, on average, support about 7 unemployed relatives. So there's an economic impact as well if you reduce the ability to take care of the families. But look, we've had engagements, and look, we're coming to the end of the current 3-year wage agreement now. So engagements are going to start soon for the next year's increases. Look, for us, number one is that public servants, the working class, the middle class public servants, must receive inflation increases. You can't expect them earning 200,000 rand to now take a cut. We think at the management level that easily they could take an increase below inflation. And then also that the executives, that's the ministers, the premiers, the mayors, the DGs, the CEOs, can in fact actually take a salary cut. And also the significant levels of bloated structures and perks at a management level. To give you one example, in Eskom, the management structure there increased tenfold from 80 to 800. And those managers earn about 2 million rand each. So we think really the place to start is one around wasteful expenditure and corruption, is around the tax authority. But let's also start specific in the wage bill around the bloated management structures. We've also put in proposals that let's have one single public service bargaining engagement. Let's put the entities and the SOEs back under the public service bargaining process, because that will assist government to plan better for the future so that they can know that this is the salary increases projected for the next 3 years. And you find the real ballooning of the wage bill has been in the public sector entities, especially at a management level. The public service is much more stable. But look, the other thing we're also saying that, look, we can also look at the vacancy issue. There's currently about 122,000 vacancies in the public service. You may not need to fill all of them, but what we could do is to fill the critical priority service delivery posts, like teachers, nurses, doctors, and then you can leave out some of the management and the policy and the administrative posts. You can also manage your resources better, for example, in the police service, where there's a need for more police officers, but yet you've got about 2/3 of our police officers deployed to desk jobs. That should be changed drastically to release policing to go community policing. So saying it's a multiple intervention, and we can be smart but willing to engage, and let's see how do we find each other to stabilize the public fiscus.
Matthew, I just want to get a sense from you, because you know, there's a lot of numbers you've thrown our way and a lot of suggestions. But for the benefit of the listeners, is how big is, I guess, the public sector workforce, and what does it actually take in terms of state resources? Because when we hear about, you know, cutting public sector wage spending and all that, what does it actually look like? As in, how many people are actually employed by the state and its affiliate institutions, and how much is actually being spent annually on some of these wages and salaries?
No, that's a very good point you've raised. People often forget that. So in 1994, we had about 34 million South Africans and about 1 million public servants. Today, we have 1.2 million public service posts, of which about 1.1 million are filled at any day and time. But our population is now about 57 million. So you can see the population has almost doubled, but our public service headcount has basically remained stable. So that's also why government has now actually come to agreement with ourselves that the problem is not the headcount, it's more on the broader package, so to speak. But we think it goes further than that. It's also about how you spend the money and so on. The average company would normally spend about half of its expenditure on the wage bill in any company. The public service, the wage bill consumes about 35% of the budget, and it's been relatively stable at that for the past few years. And in fact, there's been a slight decrease in the headcount in the public service for the last couple of years, on average about 2% each year, because posts are not being filled. The difficulty when you do that, you don't do it in a smart way, you can create other problems. So now, for example, you have in hospitals instances when children die because instead of having 6 nurses on duty, you had 1 nurse. We had a doctor in Cape Town who died in a car accident because she had just come off a 48-hour shift. So, and then, of course, we always talk about education as an investment in our future, but we have increasing teacher-learner ratios in our public schools. So you need to do this thing in a very smart way. You shouldn't be compromising public service delivery. We should be looking at how to reduce the amount of ministers we have, the amount of ministerial officials we have, the amount of managers, administrative posts, and be shifting what we have towards support services for public goods, for public services, etc. But also we're having a very good discussion with the private sector and with government around what you call prescribed assets or impact investments, where up to 10% of investment funds from the public sector, the private sector, already by law can be invested in what you call prescribed assets or impact investments, where they contribute towards essential public goods like roads, railways, ports, bursaries for children at universities, because government will never have enough money on its own to cover all the public services society needs. So it's about how can we start, as a nation, be it government, labor, or business, contributing towards that to start dealing with these issues. For example, the road infrastructure backlog is about 600 billion rand. Government doesn't have that kind of money. It'll never have that kind of money. So it's about how can we all start contributing now in a sustainable way, which can really grow the economy. So I think the crisis is a useful conversation.
Sorry to cut you off, but I wanted to just check something. Especially the debate about prescribed assets, I think it's been something, a bit of a contentious issue. But I wanted to, raise something with you just to get a sense of COSATU's thinking, because I know there's been some opposition to, the investment in prescribed assets. Would that not, in effect, be similar to the suggestion to have 10% of the government employees' pension funds money going towards clearing some of Eskom's debt, I believe 250 billion rand. Is that not sort of the same points of argument that are being raised, simply because Eskom is this public utility, it's a public good, it's something that affects everyone? So would that not be the same type of rationale?
Yes, no, exactly. And in fact, how we managed to make huge progress in the whole prescribed assets debate was when we presented our Eskom intervention proposals at NEDLAC to the Presidential Working Committee, and business was there. So that is part of our proposals, that we know that government, for example, doesn't have the money to intervene in Eskom. Eskom, as you said, is the most important company in the country. If Eskom collapses, we'll have no economy, no jobs, no pensions will be left untouched. So it's about seeing how do we all contribute as a society to do this thing. We need a social compact where government, business, and labor all contribute. We all make some compromises. We all make some contributions and some sacrifices. But if you do it together, we can minimize the risk and exposure, and you can avoid the calamities of failing to act. We've seen with SA since December how rapidly things have deteriorated, literally sometimes by the hour. You can manage an SA collapse. It'll be painful, but you can manage it. But you wouldn't be able to manage an Eskom collapse. We'll have no economy left. So our point is that let's intervene. Let's all contribute together, and we can do it. For example, Eskom's debt level is 454 billion rand. They tell us they can manage 200 billion rand. We would want to verify both figures to be sure, because there is an element of rebuilding trust. But what we proposed on Eskom is that, okay, if you can't manage this 254 billion rand, let's contribute all of us together through a special finance vehicle, which includes both public and private resources. From the public sector, we look at the PIC, the Development Bank, the CETAS, the Industrial Development Corporation. But equally, the private sector investment and pension funds must also contribute. That way, you spread the risk as far as possible, so the disruption is as minimal as possible. But for example, in the PIC already has 104 billion rand invested in Eskom through government guaranteed bonds, which Eskom has been paying back without fail, and there's a return on investment there. So actually, it's a good investment because you get a return on investment. We're looking at maybe doing a similar thing, but we're also proposing that the PIC should actually become an equity shareholder in Eskom, so it actually has a controlling part of Eskom. It sits on the table, and it can force Eskom to implement the turnaround plan, because we can't be bailing out Eskom every 5 seconds. We can invest once, but there needs to be a turnaround plan. We can't just throw money down a hole. It has to be a sustainable investment. But it's a useful thing, because business is now saying they're willing to contribute. They recognize this is a national urgency, and all of us are in this ship together. We have to all contribute. And we're confident, because we had a similar social compact with business and government a year ago around Edcon, the retail clothing company, which was dying. There was 140,000 direct and indirect jobs at risk. And we put together a turnaround plan, which made sense. And there was a 3 billion intervention plan by the banks, the shopping center landlords, and by labor through the unemployment insurance fund. We all contributed a billion rand, and that's able to ask Ed.
Now, Matthew, I just wanted to direct your attention back to, you know, public sector wages, because one of the things that you guys as a Congress have actually come up with is that you're suggesting that all state agencies be placed under something called the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes. So, look, we've been raising it for many years because it makes it very difficult to have multiple negotiations in the public service and sector at once. It fragments labor's power, and labor's power is always about being united, having one voice. And it often results in some workers receiving delayed increases or getting very little increases. We've been raising for government because we think it will benefit government as well, especially Treasury, to have one negotiating process because they can also then plan for the future, saying, they know the entire wage bill is going to increase by so much each year for the next 3 years. It also helps them to address the massive ballooning in the management perks in the public sector entities. So right now, not everybody who works for the government actually works for the public service. If you work for the revenue service, it's a public sector entity. SABC, Denel, Transnet, all of these guys, they're not public service departments. They're entities or they're agencies or they're enterprises or companies falling under government. In the end, most of them, their money comes from the fiscus, but Treasury and government have very little control about how they spend their money. So we've been saying, let's do that. We think it's a mutual win-win situation. It could help kind of stabilize and help give kind of long-term projections that all of us would benefit from.
Yeah. Okay. And then, Matthew, on the last point for this discussion is, why is it, perhaps you could shed some light, why is it that when public sector wages are being negotiated, that you guys are negotiating on inflation-backed increases, but when Treasury does most of its calculations, it's doing that according to nominal GDP, to fluctuations in nominal GDP. Does it not make sense that public sector wages, since they're such a big cost item for the government and for Treasury, should be all calculated, I guess, against the same benchmark?
Look, from our side, our position is that we have to protect workers from inflation. Our basis comes from that. Government member doesn't just budget for salaries, but also budgets for administrative costs. So at times they would not always give everything an inflation cost increase. We've seen some departments, they just give a nominal amount, might even just be 2%, etc., or a cut. But for us, because we're focusing on the salaries, then we have to take into account inflation. And in particular, how inflation hits the poor much harder, you know, around electricity, transport, fuel, food increases, etc. So it is a bit of a juggling act. But we think actually this is, we might actually have a bit more space to fund each other on, because Treasury's projections for the wage increases and so on was at averaging an inflation level about 5.3, 5.5%. But inflation has gone down to 4.8 to 4.5, and now sitting kind of around 3.8%. So in that regard, we actually might have more space to fund each other around the wage bill that could protect our members' needs to get inflation increases, etc., but also give breathing space for government to reduce expenditure and so forth. But yeah, look, from any worker, it's always about inflation. Can I keep my salary and will I have the same value of salary in a year's time?
No. So that's fine. Just getting some clarity there. So that's been us with COSATU's parliamentary coordinator, Matthew Marks, just shedding some light on some of COSATU's thinking around the public sector wage bill, which is likely to be a big issue when Minister Tito Mboweni presents his budget on Wednesday, because a lot of economists have actually flagged that the public sector wage bill is an area that the minister could cut spending on, but we have Parks telling us that there are a number of different interventions that could actually be done. For example, greater control around wasteful spending and corruption, maybe some of the issues just around, SARS, making sure that it's run more efficiently, and also suggesting at the end that wages are actually being calculated, or increases are being fought for on an inflation basis, simply because they are trying to find a way to protect workers.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Wow, the public sector wage bill. Yeah, such a contentious issue. But I think the minister is going to have a big balancing act on his hands, because you're either going to increase revenues or you're going to cut costs. And cutting costs right now is, and both of them are just politically, I don't know what word to use. Maybe I can use the word suicide. But I don't think there's political will on both sides, because increasing revenues means increasing taxes. And right now, South African consumers have enough on their hands. And there was already a VAT increase that happened recently. And just because of inflation, the amount of taxes that people, you know, will end up forking out, at least on income taxes, you know, just naturally go up on their own. But so raising any tangible taxes is a tough one on that end. At the same time, cutting costs, you have a big line item, 35% of the budget, like what Matthew Park said, and cutting anywhere there is also, you know, contentious issue, simply because you want to be seen as a government that's there to protect the people, and in protecting the people, you are there to protect the 1.1 million people that are part of that public service. So I think the minister is going to have a very tough job on his hands. What I will say is some of the suggestions that are coming out from COSATU do make sense, because, you know, you're talking about, you know, being efficient, cutting out corruption. You're talking about freezing some of the salaries. Basically, the way that it's phrased, at least, it sounds like a win-win, but it remains to be seen whether or not in actual practice, because in South Africa, there's a tendency to have really nice, good sounding plans that make all the sense in the world, but the actual implementation of those plans is always, you know, quite a dog show. I mean, there were plans to have Eskom, you know, being separated into three different companies 20 years ago, right? It sounded good then, it sounds good now, but having it actually happening is such a tough issue to happen. The issue of proscribed assets, that one I'm not going to comment on for now, simply because if you're investing in proscribed assets, I think you then have to ask yourself, is the mandate really to gain a return on the investment, or are we just saying that this has become public good expenditure, simply because some of these projects, yes, Matthew Parks talks about the fact that the fact that the PIC and the GEPF, with their more than 100 billion rand invested in Eskom through the bonds, has realized returns. But beyond that, when it comes to the schools, the roads, etc., will it all always, you know, end up bearing fruit? So at some point, people have to have that discussion. Otherwise, it's going to be an interesting speech. Looking forward to hearing what Minister Mboweni has to say. So that's been it in terms of today's episode of the BD Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. Remember that you can also review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Amula. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a Multimedia Live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.